Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. It's me, Sean, and alongside me, well, no, virtually alongside me, is Robbie Britton. How are you doing, Robbie?
I'm all right, Sean. Yeah, it's all virtual these days, isn't it? Well, I'm good. I've been allowed outside for the first time in 2 months, so feeling wonderful.
How did you celebrate that fact?
By going outside.
But what form did that take?
I wasn't massively excited about it. I've been cycling indoors and I was kind of like, yeah, I probably enjoy going out. I'll go out and have a bike ride. And when I got outside, I was just, it was like Christmas. I just felt absolutely wonderful. I just this big grin on my face. I potentially went a little too hard at times, just like bombing up and down some hills. But no, it was a wonderful feeling. I felt really grateful for the opportunity to get outdoors. Rather than,
and has this been? Is it still cycling? No running. The injury.
And I've also done a 10-minute run. I'm not one to get carried away, which is not true. But I'm building back up. I had a development actually. I don't know if I'm going straight in depth straight away. You only asked how I am, and I'm giving you my life story.
It's important.
I have a development, a potential diagnosis fix for my injury. So I am, and it could potentially come from quite a silly mistake I made.
Go on, spill the beans. Come on,
you want to hear now? So like, I injured, I pulled basically last July. I was literally in the shape of my life, right? I reckon I possibly could have run 2:06 for the marathon, and like especially in those fancy shoes. And I aggravated something around my glute, and it was the weekend of our training camp we do annually. And I just had to hobble around. I was in pain the whole time. So then I jumped on the bike to kind of rehab and carried on and just could not diagnose it. It felt like it was moving around. I went to see different experts and described the pain, described the injury and like the moment it happened. And then we just couldn't really get to the bottom of it. And then it culminated last December, going out to the States for a race, just being really wary of kind of it going wrong and it going wrong. And it turns out, right, I could have potentially been cycling with my seat really, really stupidly high, right? So my initial injury came, probably went, right? And then where I'm sat with the seat really, really high, it's done something to my psoas muscle, like inside the kind of in the groin and in my hip flexors, because I'm cycling in this ridiculous position because I've got really stumpy little legs. Like I look like a normal human being, but I've got really little legs. And so if you do it, all the measurements of height for the seats and things and the calculations, it doesn't work for me because I'm mostly just torso and head.
Right,
head's quite large.
Yeah.
And so I lowered the seat and was like, oh, feels all right. I lowered it a little bit more. And I'm talking like 4 or 5 centimetres difference, which is quite a lot for a seat. Lo and behold, I was finishing my bike ride, and this is only like last week I made this realization, and my knee felt normal. It felt like it wasn't injured. And like there was a kind of mixture of feeling really, really happy, like that actually I might have solved this. I'm optimistic. And also a little bit stupid. all this time off running, because I'm cycling like in an adult's bike when I should be on a kid's bike, basically.
Yeah. We should campaign for different measurements for people with short legs.
No, there probably are out there. It would be mainly be like user error, rather. Like, it's no one else's fault. Like it is me being an idiot, more than anything. But like, I could look at it in a totally fantastic light, in that actually, and it shows that kind of holistic approach to looking at injuries and kind of as an athlete looking at all different walks. Like I've changed my seat in chairs and stuff at desks. I've changed the amount of time I spend sitting down, the mass of all different, loads of different bits I changed, loads of strength and conditioning stuff. I'm probably going to be bulletproof coming back now. And it was a simple thing like that that could have been the problem in the meantime.
Just look out. Whenever there's a race that's going to be on, maybe next year, you'd be flying for it.
I could, yeah. Well, I could even do like a virtual 5K and just do it all downhill.
Yeah, so you're not disillusioned. Then you're quite upbeat about what's going on.
Mate, I am a man who just focuses on what I can do rather than what I can't.
Lovely.
And that's it.
I'm currently, I said to you off air, let's say, I'm struggling with a headache after doing a stupidly long run yesterday, so I'm slightly down. The sun is shining as well. I really want to go out for a run today, but I think I'm going to have to give it a miss and come back another day. But it was a nice run.
From a headache, 20 odd miles. 20 odd miles. Yeah. Come on. How fast did you go for your 20 odd miles? I know you want to tell people.
Well, now I averaged 4:10 per K. But the thing with it is the first half was off-road-ish and up, there's a lot of uphill. I climbed, if anyone knows Dorset, I went to the top of Egerton Hill, which is a hill. It's an old Roman fort, which apparently there's rumours if you go up there like on a cold, misty night, you'll see Roman legionnaire ghosts hanging out on the side of this hill. Because basically it's a big Roman fort. So I went up to the top of this Roman fort. There wasn't a single ghost up there. I came back down. I ran all right. But at the end of it, I was absolutely shocked because I'd already had the headache before it. And I've just been struggling all day today. So if I sound a little bit downbeat, that's
do you think
it was caused by Roman legionnaires.
Yeah, could you have been possessed? Running.
Maybe. I haven't had any thoughts about attacking anyone today or
you built any
or
walls.
Things that Romans do.
Built any walls?
Yeah, I haven't.
We did speak about it though, didn't we? We said that it could be that you were a bit dehydrated because you pushed a boat out.
It probably is that, yeah. Well, I did drink quite a lot last night of just liquid, but let's see.
Liquid.
I'm drinking a lot. Like I say, alcohol-free beer is my current drink of choice. It's getting big, that alcohol-free beer. Like, everyone's drinking it these days. I'm right on for it. So
we got some in the cupboard. I had one. It was all right.
It's all right, isn't it? Yeah, that's about as exciting as getting down in Dorset. I'm loving the running still. It's absolutely amazing. When I get a chance to do it, I haven't got a headache. I'm running really well. It's just a shame. I've been planning with my coach, obviously. I'm having another baby in September. So I want to try and get at least one more big race out of the way. And obviously now we don't know what's going to happen, do we? I mean, there's even like October, I guess, things like London Marathon, they've got to be a bit under threat. I think there's been talk about maybe having to have an elite-only race. It's really impossible to know.
It's difficult to speculate, isn't it? Because obviously the people behind the scenes are working their socks off. And if us Joe Public are speculating, it can possibly make their job a bit harder. But yeah, I do. Obviously that feeling of uncertainty is happening for everyone. You don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, lots of people, like the Irish, have come out and said that no sport with fans until middle of August. So I guess there might be a chance of races.
Well, yeah, the British champs might go on then. There's no fans at that normally, is there?
No. That fits in before that. Yeah, that's in the stage before. Yeah, I think the Netherlands, which obviously will be back there by hopefully in the next couple of weeks. That they've suggested nothing till September.
Okay.
Any news in Italy? They talk of anything? I guess Serie A's coming back, but
I don't follow the football anymore. I used to be a devout football fan, but I lost my love for it. But I know I've spoke to a couple of. We've had some more races cancelled. My wife had the Grand Trail Courmayeur cancelled, which was mid July. But some of the ultra distance cycling events, they're a bit more optimistic because obviously there's no fans. And one of the rules is not to cycle other people, so you have to socially distance. They're kind of optimistic, but again, we need kind of, it's all about self-reliance there. So it's like over a number of days, but you are traveling a large region. But you have to self-rely. So normally you might use hotels or hostels and stuff, but if you're just got to take a bivvy or sleep in a bus stop, I guess that might upset people.
And I guess if you're putting potentially putting public services like the rescue teams at risk of being used, I guess you're using services that could be used elsewhere. But
it's weird. Yeah. So the long distance stuff, even the long distance running, you kind of feel that it probably brings more good than. It's not like the people doing it are purposely reckless. There was someone outside Turin who had to be rescued. I think they went for a walk in the mountains and dislocated their shoulder. Like the day it was lifted, they had to get the chopper out to save someone. You'd feel like a bit of a prat, wouldn't you?
You would, yeah.
First day out, what you done? Fell over, called the helicopter.
Yeah.
You're like, all right. But,
what are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah. Another big day. Shoulders back in. All right, good. It's interesting to know. I'm optimistic, so I am I'd love to do something like that, but if it doesn't happen, I might do some personal challenges. And if it does, I just love racing, man. I love to race.
Yeah.
I just...
So, would you like to do a virtual race then? How do you feel about doing these virtual challenges that are coming up?
So, yeah, I am... I'm kind of... If I was running, I'd be doing it. I'd be definitely like doing like a 5K, 10K, like real blast, yeah. Real kind of... And then maybe using some of that kind of a GPS, like nifty in on a small bend or something. But my... So, like, the watch... I don't know why it is, but every watch I've ever got never does... It, like, elapsed time is always the same as moving time, even if I take a break for, like, a wee. So I'd be at a disadvantage. I couldn't stop every 30 seconds and just pause. My watches still do... It's probably some of, like, the settings or user error. But I'd love to just kind of... I would have enjoyed having a go at, like, the Ross Barkley 5K. Just absolutely smashing the life out of it down a hill.
If our listeners haven't heard of this Ross Barkley 5K, what was the deal? Again, he'd run a 16:11 5K, started bragging about it online.
Chelsea bragged, I think. He just posted it.
Okay.
It's a fair play to old Mr. Barkley here. Chelsea posted it and everyone was like, look, he could run for... And then they... So, like, there's some really, really poor journalism. Like, absolute dog shit. Embarrassing. And it was in, like, the Times. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Ross Barkley would have been in the top 35,000 metre runners in the UK this year. Yeah, because there's been no 5,000 metre track races, you comedian, apart from a bunch of people in the US and, like, one race in Grimsby. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, he would have been... Yeah. 200 for RMR, but they didn't use that. It was really, like, it was just it was a real, like, show of the state of affairs in journalism. It was like, oh, God. It was like, I don't know. It was dog shit.
Do you remember that time when they had Ronaldo jumps 2 metres?
Yeah.
For a
just
headband.
Like that.
It's higher than the world record for high jump. But it's like, no, his head reaches 2 point something metres. Barshim's jumping his whole bloody body over 2 metres. It's not the same thing, you idiots. But anyway.
That was it was exactly the same. Barshim come below Ronaldo in the high jump when he could probably head a ball about 9 metres in the air.
Yeah. But it's been quite funny with that Barkley 5K because everyone's gone for it now, haven't they?
Yeah.
Hasn't there been like a Ross Barkley challenge? Do you know what the record is now for
the
stop start
and
lap time?
The quickest we had was probably, I think it was about 10:36, which is under 13 seconds per 100. And that was done downhill. Yeah, the first guy to get under 11 was a guy called Richard, I'm going to say McDowell or something.
The turbo ferret.
Yeah,
he's a friend of the show. He actually emailed me to say he's been up to, I was going to say up to no good, but he's been doing this 5K challenge.
I think he wanted to get on an interview, mate. We should get him on.
Yeah, we should do. We've had a brief chat with him a few years back, but we should do it again. And then with the name, the turbo ferret, you've got to... You got to give the guy a bit of a.
I do. I like. We had ferrets at 1 year in uni. We got a bit.
Oh, really?
We went to a pet shop. We're like a bit hungover, a little bit still pissed, and bought 2 ferrets. And then I built a cage, and they obviously escaped from that. But we had a spare room, so we kept ferrets in it. We did not get our deposit back that year.
No, I can't imagine you did.
We did rehouse the ferrets with a proper ferret owner in the end because we thought it was probably not the best environment for them. And they kept biting us. That was weird.
But just to clarify, the turbo ferret doesn't bite. He just runs.
Oh, I don't know.
He
may
run
bite.
Fast. Yeah. I think he's a 220. He's,
I want to say 223.
223. I was going to say 221, but you're probably right.
I wrote an article about it, but let me check. I can't be having someone's like times wrong. He ran 11:40 something for the 5K as an interval session. Yeah, he used a bit of that. It took him like an hour, I think.
Yeah.
And we popped it on Fast Running. You know what? It's actually the most popular article we've ever had on Fast Running.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I should
That's amazing.
Give the secrets out. Yeah, people loved it. I feel it was obviously the achievement, and I'd love to say it was partly down to the humour involved with the article. But
I don't think I could manage a 13-second 100 metres these days. I don't actually... Oh, downhill perhaps, yeah. Okay, downhill,
yeah.
That's fine.
And so, like, the tricks are downhill, rolling start, right? So you're pressing the watch at full pace, stopping it before you slow. And the short... I mean, you could do it as 40-metre strides downhill. So all you've got to do is hit. You haven't got to hit a 13-minute 100, a 13-second 100. You've got to hit that pace for... he's a 223 marathoner with a 208 800 back in 2017.
Okay.
There you go.
I think the marathon's stronger than that 800. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not his focus. Jesus.
Yeah. So the Turbo Ferret, he's, yeah, did the thing. You were saying about the perfect conditions.
Yes.
So there's been quite a lot of cheating, hasn't there? There's the virtual 5K championships. You mentioned there's a couple of, well, let's not mention their names, but a couple of brothers up in the Manchester area.
I laughed loudly there to kind of, you can't give that many clues. I know a couple of boys that found a car park that they knew that when they ran around that loop, the GPS was generous. And it's seen as kind of like what you've got to do is run 5K on your watch. So that's, it's just kind of slightly taken advantage. I mean, the geezer who was quickest on the first one, the Scottish one, what was his name? Oh, I've forgotten his name. He ran 13:38 and he's a 14:30 runner. And you looked at it and it was like, well, it's a 1K loop. And obviously, I don't mind. It's not like the people do get wound up about it, right? And I think you've probably got not enough going on in life if you're getting wound up at what someone else is doing virtually. But I do like to, I'm intrigued by it. So I did investigate and I went into his Strava and had a look. And yes, the loop has been listed as slightly under a K. But it's around there. And then when you look at the GPS, he's either exceedingly good at hurdling buildings or the GPS was slightly generous. It's like he would put Barshim to shame because he jumped over about four houses on every lap because it's going wide around. And it doesn't take much over, like, say you're gaining on each K, 20, 30, 50 metres, but you're doing five laps, that's 250 metres. Sure. And over your, when it comes to your 5K PB, that will give you a bit of a boost. So nothing's done. I know that a few people did look for loops that were small, but like you look at the back and forth for that chap, he generally felt like he'd gone around a 1K loop and it was probably about 900 metres. But get a measuring, I know some people got a measuring wheel out. Some of the lads up in Manchester went and got a measuring wheel, measured the loop and then did it. And they were like, I just want to do it, see what I'm at.
Right, it's probably better, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It's probably a bit too.
You're not going to win any. You're not going to win any trophies for a virtual race, are you? So you might as well do it. Test yourself rather than anything else.
We've got. So I work with a company called Centurion Running. I coach with them, and they do ultras, 50 and 100 mile ultras. And we've got this community virtual challenge. So it's more about giving everyone something to kind of to talk about, to get involved in, and we're letting them do 50. You can do 50 or 100 miles, but over the week. And they've also got marathon down all the way down to 5K, 10K, so the family can get involved. And it's the Centurion Running community is really strong, so everyone's really, it's nice to see everyone involved. There's going to be plenty. It's at the end of month in May. But it's been really interesting. So there's medals and stuff involved. But for people that like this, what's lovely is that the family can have a go. So they're probably like the kids, like the husband or the wife of the person running out, but I thought I'd get that in the right order. Not to say the wife, because obviously it's often the lady running in the household. In the same way that you are a stay-at-home dad. It's obviously not the first assumption someone makes. But so like the rest of the family can get involved and get them out. I think it's brilliant for the kids. Because they can go out and do 5 or 10K over the week. You could be walking, a little bit of jogging. And one of my guys, I spoke to him yesterday, and his son's doing it. He's nine. And he's getting involved, and he's always seen Dad go and do these races, and it's brilliant now that he can get involved. So, like, there's other ways to look at the virtual racing rather than, and there will be people racing it, definitely. If I was doing it, I'd race it. But I might still enter, just try and do a 5K or 10K, and I'm just going to go to the top of this mountain here and just run the whole way down in a pair of Next Percent. I reckon I could probably get near my 5K PB in current shape. Not very good.
Can you then do 100 miles? So you can do like as long as 100 miles in one sitting.
When we were talking about it, I feel it's better to do it over the week, right? Because it just seems that you would go out and just do, like, you might smash yourself, right? And again, it's about what's sensible at the stage. But people are up for it doing 100 miles a week. I think one of my athletes is doing the 100 mile in one go. And a few others are doing it over the course of the week. Some are doing the 5K, 10K to give it a bit of a boost. Like, it's actually some of them, because some of them, it's actually nice for them to try a 100-mile week for the first time in terms of training. There's that focus to it. And actually, how do you break down a 100-mile week in training? And believe it or not, people who run 100 milers, it's not often they run that much mileage in training. So, yeah, it could be it's a chance for a few people to experiment, kind of see how they feel, see how they'd break the week up, trial some different nutrition in between, like during races, avoid dehydration between sessions, maybe.
Yeah, a nod to me. It is amazing, that, isn't it, with these ultra runners that often they're not doing anything like the mileage that, you know, 10K, 5K runners do in, like, competitively. Crazy. But that's just the way it is.
I think it comes from, like, a level of experience as well. People come into, ultra running is very trendy, right? So people come in and they do, I've had athletes I coach who do a half, they do a marathon, right, I'm going to do an ultra. And you're straight in. So, like, you build up, I mean, you must have done a couple hundred mile weeks over your lifetime.
I think I've done a fair few of those, yeah, bloody hell.
And you build up,
I can't remember how many.
You didn't do it in the first couple of years that you're running, so you're kind of building up.
No.
Maybe the first time you do one at the peak of your block, you might do two or three at the next, that next big block of training. And that's how it's been. I've only done probably about 10, 15, if you don't include race weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't remember what I've done. I'm sure I've done, in one stage, and I was about 2012, after I was running really well, I was doing, every week I was doing 100 mile week for about 10, 12 weeks in a row, I think. I don't think I'm doing it now. Well, Martin's keen to go up to try and get 100 mile week now. Martin Cox, my coach, but I'm finding it hard with the looking after a baby and being at home and fitting into everyone else's plans. 100 mile week's just a bit of an impossibility for me right now. But,
well, you're on trail as well. You're getting hills in, so it's very different. Like 100 mile weeks, and it's like, I love this, the example of Steve Way, and he was churning it out in his blog, and people would copy. I'm going to do what Steve Way's doing. And like, but Steve's running them at 6.5 minute miling. It's taking him like 11 hours. And then someone else tries to do it, and they're doing like, they're averaging 12 minute miles. So in effect, they're doing twice as much training as Steve Way.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you do 100 mile week, how do you put it together?
I've never ever really looked at my mileage. I just do time, which is strange. Like, even when I was running at my best, it was just like, go out for a walk in the morning, do 70 minutes, come back in the evening, do 40 minutes. And then I'd do a session, I'd double almost every day, with the exception probably of Saturday and Sunday. And I might get an easy day on a Friday, which would be an easy run, or a day off. But I'd do pretty much, I knew that 70 minutes was pretty much 10 miles. So I'd do 10 miles as just my normal run.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, I'd do 4 or 5. So I'd be doing about 15, 16 a day. And then a long, you know, 20 odd miles at the weekend. That was my standard. But I'd never ever, I don't think I've ever properly sat down and until recently, looked at how many miles I was doing a week. I just went and did it. And I knew it was about 100 miles, which is, I guess, is how the guys back in the 80s, they don't know anything, you know, the courses weren't measured anywhere, were they? They're just like, that's roughly 10 miles, mark it down.
The speedometer. We'll get a bit of string on a map. That's what I used to do when I started, a bit of string on a map.
Really?
Yeah.
Measure it up. Did you have to do that then? Did you bother to measure out your mileage and stuff?
When I started out, yeah. I'll clock it on the Strava or something these days. But I don't set training to distance. Very, very rarely. There might be some specific sessions in a block that have some kind of distance, or there'll be like K reps, mile reps, 2Ks. But the training I do myself, which Tom Cragg sets, and then the training I set people, is all done in time. Because it just takes those other factors into account. It takes your timers into account. It takes the hills, a headwind, like terrain underfoot, the weather. It's all that. That's the kind of things. If you're just going off mileage, but that's what I think it'll be interesting to see how people do these, like with the Centurion one, if they're doing 50 or 100 mile weeks for the first time. Like a lot, it's interesting because there's a few discussions going online and they're just like, I'm going to do it all in one go. I'm going to do like 4 25-mile days. And again, that's part of the challenge. Like, it might be more fun.
Yeah.
What they enjoy, it's a one-off. It's not like people are looking to then do the next, like you're saying, 10, 11 weeks of high mileage. That's when you bet you felt fit as a fiddle.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually. I'd love to do, at the moment, all I'm thinking of is every now and again going out and try and take a couple of Strava course records. That's all I'm, that's the only kind of competitive stuff I'm getting. It's fun. I'm liking it. Yeah. I want to completely dominate the West Dorset leaderboards of Strava CI.
How do you do that then? It feels like that can tie on to the Ross Barkley 5Ks, because that was Strava wankers that set that up.
It's a little bit. I did read a post by Strava. If you don't follow Strava wankers, please do. publishes, it's on Twitter. It showcases various people who, post crazy stuff on Strava that's just a complete waste of everyone else's time.
It's a bit of fun, isn't it? Yeah. That's the thing. It's a bit of fun.
But they said, technically, if you go out on a long run and you see a spot where there's a course segment record that you can go for and you go for it, technically you're a wanker, but you're not necessarily a Strava wanker. But if you go specifically to a place, jog to the place, then try and set that, there's a 400 meter segment, you run as hard as you can, then you jog home. That then is an official Strava wanker.
I feel that kind of crosses that boundary. Or if you just do it in a car, that's also quite a shoddy.
Yeah.
It's how you word it, how you react to it, all that kind of stuff. When it's like, gone out and just smashed a con today. You're like, all right. Yeah.
Well done, mate.
But someone took one of mine back in, where was it? It was somewhere in, I was best man for me, for a mate's wedding, and I was down somewhere in Kent, and it came up. I was just like, why was I there? So-and-so's taken your record. I was like, right. And he'd literally gone and done his session on this segment. So maybe he wanted to take it. I just ran underneath, fair play. I don't think I can get back. It's a bit unfair. It's all yours, mate. I think the correct way is to do a tempo run and just subtly, nonchalantly take your segment back.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, yeah. Back down, we'll have to make a special trip down.
That's how I made a friend through Strava out here. I haven't got many friends. Yeah, Strava friend. My wife will mock me. Because I saw this geezer running in the local area. It's called Francesco.
Yeah.
And he was quite fast. I was like, I want to be mates with you, mate, so we can run together and I can learn Italian.
Yeah.
And so I sent him a message. Nothing, right? So the next week, I took one of his crowns and then I got a response.
Yeah. Strava, bringing people together the world over.
Yeah, bringing wankers together the world over.
That should be the tagline. I've just thought of something I was going to announce for our next, because obviously we've fallen off the wayside a little bit with the podcast in terms of weekly shows, but also with we're having a focus on different topics. And I just remembered that I just was watching, I think it was Match of the Day, Match of My Life, and I thought, what a lovely idea for a podcast. Like speaking to people about the race of their life.
There you go.
I thought that'd be really interesting. So I think that's next month. We're going to try and do that.
What's yours?
Mine's definitely. There's only one for me. It's Sunderland 2013 National Cross. I came fourth.
Bloody hell!
And it was, and I'm still living off that. I've never got close to anything like that before. And it was just one of those days where everything fell into place. It was Steve Vernon won it or second. I think he won it. And then second was, Keith Gerrard, or the other way around. And then Nielsen Hall was third. And I think I could have got Nielsen Hall, but I kind of, when you're running there and you've got no indication that you're going to be fourth in the national, you're just happy to be fourth in the national. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't, and I could have had a sprint finish, but all I was thinking was just, I've just got to hang on to fourth and don't let anyone else beat you. So you just got to make sure you do. So I didn't really think about it, but yeah, it was an amazing year. It was quite, it was the best race ever. Just one of those races where you never feel tired. And I was there running with Steve Vernon. Obviously, Steve Vernon is a hero to distance runners in the UK. I think he's won like 7 or 8 national cross country titles. And I was up there on the back of the pack and people just kept falling off the pack. Johnny Taylor, who had gone away with the In England trip with before that, and he'd absolutely smashed me every race I run against him, but he fell off the pack and other people were falling off the pack, and it was a really good standard year, I thought. Steve Vernon and Keith Gerrard, two of the best runners we've had for a long time, for cross country. So
did you win in the counties one year as well?
No.
You done well at that or not?
I won the fell racing in the counties.
Gotcha.
But that wasn't quite the same thing. That was funny because I went to that, we were going to a wedding in Surrey or something on a Friday, and I got absolutely pissed. I woke up on the floor of a travel lodge.
All right.
On the Friday,
your travel lodge was just a random one.
It was me and the wife were in the travel lodge. Gotcha. Yeah. So I woke up there, and we got up to drive to Blackburn the next day. And God, it was the hardest drive I've ever made in my life. Arrived there the next day, and I was just, it was so hot. It was like, I think someone collapsed at the finish line for the women's race. It was so hot, and there was no water, obviously, because it's just a fell race. And I just thought, I'm never going to do well here. But I just sat behind Chris Smith, and eventually I was going downhill, and I thought, I could win this. And I went on and won it. And that wasn't as good a race as the national, obviously. I don't think
okay,
in terms
fair
of
fair enough. I mean, four for the national. I'd take that. I got 98th in the Southerns once. That was my best cross country performance.
Really? you've had better though. What has been your best? What was the day, the race you loved the most?
Oh mate, for me again, it's very easy because I finished third at the World and European 24-Hour Champs. That was just the best day ever, like literally a whole day. And it, the way I like to finish quite strong. And we'd secured about 1 hour to go. We knew we'd secured the team gold, which was our main target. And it was absolutely wonderful. When I found out I was in sixth, and they just went, well, look, you can't cock it up now by going too hard. Let me off the leash a bit. And I just went for it. And I was passing everyone. There's like 300 people. And I'm just absolutely tanking it, and within a couple of laps I was ahead of fourth, so I jumped into third, and I was chasing this Polish guy in second, and I got wow, within 40 meters. I could see him at the end. Over 24 hours there, jeez, was 40 meters between us. But I thought it was
that's crazy.
I thought I was going for European medals. I didn't know the worlds were, yeah, we basically three Europeans were in the first three positions. We beat amazing. So like I got there, and I remember just like someone said, I know it was a, you've got a world bronze, and I just cried my eyes out. It was good. It's an easy decision for me. Same as you, I'm still dining off it. I kind of just built my whole career.
And it's one of those races, on those races, you just do not feel, you almost don't feel yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like I never felt that tired on the national cross. I didn't even feel any feelings. I was just like kind of like, it was almost like an out of body experience. You were watching yourself kind of almost tactically pick up positions and across the course. You never really questioned how you were feeling. I don't know about you. 24 hours is quite a long time to run. So yeah, it's probably different, I think.
24 hours, there was a significant amount of pain. The first, I had stomach issues in the first 6 hours. It was a tough day. But the last, I think I closed with like a 3:23 marathon. And that just, the whole thing felt brilliant. I was working with Paddy Robbins, who's one of our other, we were both working to secure gold for the team. And we'd never won gold before. And I think we set a British record for the team. We just had an absolutely fantastic time. So yeah, it's similar. Like you just didn't feel, like the last hour when I was pushing, that was, it was painful. Oh, it was emotional. And it was brilliant. I've had a few races where I finished quite strong like that. But it's weird because it's not a sprint finish, because it can maybe be like 2-3 hours worth. I think I've had 4 or 5 hours of finishing like a train, and you do feel brilliant. You feel absolutely wonderful because you've got everything right, but you're kind of like gradually releasing that energy you've got stored, knowing how long's left, and then you kind of push the boat a bit further. I guess that was the same with the national, wasn't it? You've got a set amount of energy, and you're thinking, all right, I can push for third, but have I got enough to hold off fifth?
Yeah, exactly.
Although I was solely focused on the guy ahead of me, and I could see him. I could see him, and like they get a buzzer for the last minute, and I probably was like knocking out, and I maybe it was like a 6 minute mile rather than, but it felt like I was doing 4 minute mile. I was just like absolutely flying because everyone else was kipping.
Yeah. Oh, great days. Yeah, but we'll have to do that. I'll try and find some people. Yeah. And please get in touch with the podcast. Let us know who you want to hear from, who's had an amazing performance out of nothing.
Who would you like to hear from? Who's your dream guest?
It'd be good to talk to Paula about 2:15, but I don't think Paula's ever going to answer our phone call, is she? So other than that, I'm trying to think. I think one of my favourite ever performances to watch was Jess Andrews, who is a 10,000 metre runner from Britain, who won the night of the 10,000 metres, and she beat Lynette Massai with just this amazing finish with about 2 or 3K to go. To be fair, we've already spoken to her about it on the show. So yeah, but that was one of the best things I've ever seen as a spectator.
When
but,
Steph Twirl did it a couple of years ago as well. That was awesome. I was shouting at the screen, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, email us in.
Yeah.
Get in touch at letsgetround.co.uk, or we are on the old Twitter, the old Twit Twats, and Instagram and all that. So yeah, at Let's Get Running, let us know.
Do you think
I better go?
You gotta go, haven't you? I was just gonna ask one last question.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Like, do you think for sprinters and stuff, it's as good a feeling? Because obviously they're like, how do you, because obviously like, you're in the cross, you've got a whole race to think about it, the 24 hours, got the whole thing to reflect back on. When it's the race is over in 10 seconds, I mean, it must feel great, but afterwards, like, it's just weird, isn't it? It'd be interesting, the comparison.
I think I'd love to be a sprinter, though, you know what I mean?
What's the saying? Is it everyone else is just, like, every runner's just a failed sprinter. Like, everyone tries to run fast first, and they can't do it, they go longer. I'm saying that as a 24-hour runner. You can clearly see that I tried every distance and decided I wasn't fast enough, so kept going.
Keep moving up, Oh, I'd love to be a sprinter. Anyway, right, I better go and tend to this young lady I am a parent of. I don't know what I was going to say then, but anyway, I better go and see Greta. I couldn't get the words to come out in the right line.
Go and drink some
I better go and see the little girl.
Electrolytes.
I should, comedian. Hopefully I won't have a headache. Don't you come down to West Dorset taking my Strava comms, listeners. Stay away from West Dorset.
So first flight that flies out of Italy, I'm coming to take all your crowns and see those Roman ghosts.
Beautiful. Right. Cheers, Robbie.
Nice to chat to you.
Big soon. Bye. Right.